This talk was given by Jody Hojin Kimmel Sensei at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is a resident teacher at the monastery and co-director of ZCNYC. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about the temple's retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org/ZCNYC. Thanks for listening.
So within the container of contemplation that we're creating, holding space with our body, speech, thoughts, actions in such a way. Feel free also to move to another seat or change your position. We're not upholding a rigorous sitting. And not unlike Vimalakirti's living room, this space can hold the multitudes. It's never full. We will make more and more and more room for whoever comes in. So when Shariputra got to the event with Vimalakirti, he said, I don't know if we have enough chairs. And Vimalakirti said to Shariputra, did you come here for a chair? So I don't think we came here for a chair. So anytime you can just return. And also I'm speaking from up here, so feel free to turn or whatever you need to. But you can also just face the way you are, whatever's comfortable. And I'd like to introduce Joshin and Yunin and Tanya. From the Beyond Fear of Differences group and What is Whiteness, and all of you who are part of this Sangha today. So I'll just say a little bit about the morning and Martin Luther King. On Wednesday, January 15th, he would have been 91 years old. So he was born in 1929. I don't know that I see anyone here. I think we were all just little blinks at that point. And he was assassinated in 1968 at the age of 39. Is anybody here 39 or 40? Put your hand up. No? Okay, 30s? Yeah, so imagine that, right? A young man, and all that he did up to that point. He was arrested nearly 30 times while engaged in direct action protest and believed in the necessity of disruption to upset the comfortable stasis of inequality. So he has much to say about our contemporary moment, about this presidential campaign season and the injustices that plague our, if you want to call them blue cities or red states, whatever. I was recently sent a Washington Post article from Tanya on Jeannie Theo Harris, and she quotes, more than 50 years after, I read from what he wrote in a letter to civil rights leaders. We do not need allies who are more devoted to order than to justice. I hear a lot of talk these days about direct action program alienating former friends. I would rather feel they are bringing to the surface the many latent prejudices which were always there. White America is not even psychologically, White America is not even psychologically organized to close the gap. Essentially, it seeks only to make it less painful and less obvious, but in most respects, retain it. We are often treated to the version of the civil rights leader who is a cheerleader of improvement, asserting that the arc of the moral universe bends towards justice. King was familiar with being welcomed by leaders who saw themselves as liberal and anti-racist, only to have them react furiously when attention turned to the need for local change. Reverend King's observation, I think bridges the race work and spiritual work we're trying to attend to in this community. Putting an end to suffering, not a more palatable suffering. Liberation, not for a more real liberation, not for a more comfortable cage. Attention turned to the need for local change. How local can we get? Don't go any further than the tip of your nose. That's how local he was speaking of and Buddha was speaking of. That's how local it has to get. We need him now more than ever, so we bring him here today with his eternal spirit and message. Where is he living now? Where is he living now? Right? Where is anyone that we have lost living now? It's in our way of being. It's in our actions. It's in our speech. That's where he lives, how we do that. So let what he stood on this earth for be alive and not squandered in our embodiments now. That's what we're here for. What did Martin Luther King see of himself that led him down a path of compassion, love, interrelatedness, and nonviolence? At 39, what did he see of himself that was his path? What stored consciousness from the collective struggle of humanity did he come to do what he did? What led a man to set out himself to see himself in the way that he did? We would call this in Buddhism living the life of the bodhisattva calling, the bodhisattva vow, one who is dedicated to alleviate suffering not only in themselves but in everyone because of that knowing that we are so woven together. Everyone can come in, so make sure you do that. So we are so intimately connected, but that's what we've forgotten. That's what we've forgotten. So we're here too. Remember, Martin came from a long line of ancestors who were deeply involved in the church and God, who were intimate with this interrelatedness, and who knew the political as spiritual and the spiritual as political. In his childhood, he experienced the pain of being overlooked in the world as a young black boy, the shattering of the interrelationship. Jesus was the teacher, God the liberator, the church, the place where black people could congregate and share everything from food to clothes to love. Martin said in 1948, "My call to ministry came about in the summer of 1944 when I felt an inescapable urge to serve society. In short, I felt a sense of responsibility which I could not escape." So that feeling of that kind of vow or that kind of mind that feels like there is no other way is profound, and we all have it in a way. The noble way-seeking mind and path was not only spoken in church, but of course we know he was bringing it way out into every universe, onto the streets, everywhere. And when he came down the steps of the church, I thought it sounded a lot like when Buddha finally got out of his palace and was protected and hadn't seen anything. His parents had basically secured him from seeing anything and fulfilled, sated him with pleasure. He saw four messengers, Buddha and Martin Luther King, old age, sickness, death, and a mendicant. And Buddha said, he had never seen old age because everyone that was old was removed. He'd never seen sickness or death. And he kept saying, me too, me too. I'm subject to this. And his chariot driver said, uh-huh, you too. Every one of us, every one of us. He met his ignorance of separation and isolation. Each in their own way saw the immense suffering of people and knew they had to do something in response. And that was the, perhaps symbolized by the mendicant, living that life of liberation. The essence of Buddhism is the three treasures, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. So we can understand Buddha as our awake nature, consistently expressed as the most openness to accepting anyone as they are. This has been obstructed by human intervention, interference, and in many ways, I think we are seeing this crumble all over. Dharma is thought of as the teachings, and these teachings are essentially a description of how things are. And the Sangha is the circle of practitioners or the community of all beings. Community is critical because it can reflect the things that we're bypassing. Sangha is the space where we're rubbing into each other like sharp stones in a tumbler, where we come into contact, there is conflict. This conflict isn't the usual normal conflict in Sangha. It isn't worldly conflict, because when we enter into a sacred or beloved community, as Dr. King called it, we have a different obligation, a different responsibility. We can see our interactions are pointing back to the things we need to look at more closely. We're being reminded to practice patience, kindness, and more important, our vulnerability together. So difficult. Using these definitions, the Dharma of Martin Luther King shines forth. He was a Christian, a Baptist minister, but by inclination and education, he was a religious inclusivist, which means he saw the workings of divinity in every being. We need to recognize the setup so our differences are celebrated, not wounding. In a sermon from Montgomery, Alabama, Dr. King wrote, "All that has just been said concerning the spiritual element in man gives backing to the Christian contention that man is made in the image of God. Man is more than flesh and blood." In Zen terms, we say, all beings are Buddha. One could quibble that this is not exactly the same as Dr. King's proposition, but it has a very close resonance. His practice was to see what was good and true in each person, even his enemies. He did his best to meet each person with respect, dignity, and this was the training that was offered to each of the civil rights activists in the early development of the movement. Similarly, in our training, in Zazen, and in our practice community, to meet ourselves with acceptance and recognition of Buddha, and to relate to each other in this way. Buddha meeting a Buddha. Everyone in front of us, to know every person we look at has suffered, is suffering, and we're a Buddha meeting a Buddha. Dr. King's Dharma unfolds in so much of what he said and did. In the early 50s, I thought this was interesting, doing graduate studies in theology, He studied about Buddhism. He studied everything, every religion. In a paper he wrote about Mahayana ideals, so we're the Mahayana school of Buddhism here, which is compassionate action. He wrote a paper about the Mahayana ideals, and its conclusion he writes approvingly. This is his words. Buddhism became a religion for the layman as well as for the monk. The emphasis on fleeing from the world was replaced by desire to live in the world while yet not being of the world. The mature vision of Martin Luther King was rooted in one of Buddha's great discoveries in the first days of his awakening. Shakyamuni Buddha had insight into the workings of what we call codependent arising, mutual causality, sati pamada, that all life and all things are infinitely dependent on each other, that nothing has an inherent or permanent nature, but is always arising. King's clear expression of this principle explains, and this is his words, we are all tied together in a single garment of destiny, an inescapable network of mutuality. I can never be what I ought to be until you are allowed to be what you ought to be. There it is, perfectly said. And later in an essay called The World House, he writes, we are inevitably our brother's keeper because we are our brother's brother. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. And I'm keeping to his words, where he uses, you see, brotherhood and man. The third jewel, Sangha, is the heart of Dr. King's vision. He expressed this as a beloved community, a term borrowed from the American philosopher Josiah Ross. And Tanya will speak to this shortly. In Dr. King's day, in our day, we don't have to look far to experience a world mired in violence and war. Not that things have ever been peaceful here. Buddha called this the Saha realm, which means the realm of things which must be endured. Today's violence belongs to us. It's our responsibility. Surely not the dream we would wish to pass on to our children, but we have. As I said, he studied everything, seeing himself in a lineage that was connected to Jesus Christ, to Buddha, to Thoreau, Tolstoy, Gandhi. He was not so much a teacher about race. Racism is an effect, but the artifact of social violence, but about the life and practice of active nonviolence. He raised up the ideal of the beloved community. In Buddhism terms, we call it the Pure Land. In Gospel of Matthew, the city upon a hill. It's not a land of conflict, but a society that solves its conflicts without falling into retribution, overt or structural violence. This community is rooted in love, not hate, because radical means going to the root. So preaching in Montgomery in 1957, he said, in the final analysis, love is not the sentimental thing we talk about. It is not merely an emotional something. Love is creative, understanding goodwill for all men. It is the refusal to defeat any individual. When you rise to the level of love, of its great beauty and power, you seek only to defeat evil systems. Individuals who happen to be caught up in that system, you love. What is the alternative? What do we see in the news each day? What do you see everywhere? What do we realize at 4 a.m. in the dark nights? King's teachings were not only about bringing the races together or even nonviolence. His teachings were about shifting a consciousness of hate, among living beings to one of love and compassion. He was talking to every living being while calling out the blind so they could wake up to this. So this celebration today is where we can consider deeply in our whole being, in our togetherness and our silence, not using our arms so much to speak or moving about, leaving a consciousness of hate. In his words, hate for hate only intensifies the existence of hate and evil in the universe. If I hit you and you hit me and I hit you back and you hit me back and go on, you see that goes on ad infinitum. It never ends. Somewhere somebody must have a little sense, and that's the strong person. The strong person is the person who can cut off the chain of hate, the chain of evil, and that is the tragedy of hate. It only intensifies the existence of hate and evil in the universe. Somebodies must have religion enough and morality enough to cut it off and inject within the very structure of that of the universe that strong and powerful element of love. So now Joshin will read, and Yunin will read two paragraphs of Martin Luther King's acceptance speech for the Nobel Prize in Oslo in 1964. You will hear that he names the conditions of suffering so that we can understand what a consciousness of hatred can bring about. But he is speaking to everyone. He is speaking to us right now.
Thanks. I just hold it like this. I can clip it. I never clipped before. Oh, here. Okay. Good morning, everybody. I accept the Nobel Prize for Peace at a moment when 22 million Negroes of the United States of America are engaged in a creative battle to end the long night of racial injustice. I accept this award on behalf of a civil rights movement which is moving with determination and a majestic scorn for risk and danger to establish a reign of freedom and a rule of justice. I am mindful that only yesterday in Birmingham, Alabama, our children crying out for brotherhood were answered with fire hoses, snarling dogs, and even death. I am mindful that only yesterday in Philadelphia, Mississippi, young people seeking to secure the right to vote were brutalized and murdered. And only yesterday, more than 40 houses of worship in the state of Mississippi alone were bombed or burned because they offered a sanctuary to those who would not accept segregation. I am mindful that debilitating and grinding poverty afflicts my people and chains them to the lowest rung of the economic ladder. Therefore, I must ask why this prize is awarded to a movement which is beleaguered and committed to unrelenting struggle, to a movement which has not won the very peace and brotherhood which is the essence of the Nobel Prize.
After contemplation, I conclude that this award, which I receive on behalf of that movement, is a profound recognition that nonviolence is the answer to the crucial political and moral question of our time. The need for man to overcome oppression and violence without resorting to violence and oppression. Civilization and violence are antithetical concepts. Negroes of the United States, following the people of India, have demonstrated that nonviolence is not sterile passivity, but a powerful moral force, which makes for social transformation. Sooner or later, all the of the world will have to discover a way to live together in peace and thereby transform this
pending cosmic elegy into a creative psalm of brotherhood. If this
is to be achieved, man must evolve for all human conflict a method which rejects revenge, aggression, and retaliation. The foundation of such a method is love.
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JizoProject.